All right, let's go and bring in our good friend Andy Baggerly. He covers the Giants for the Bay Area newspaper group, the San Jose Mercury Times. Extra Bags with two G's on Twitter. Three-time Jeopardy champion and the smartest guy I know at the ballpark. Andy, how are you?
Hey, Andy.
I'm great, Marty. How are you? How are you, Patrick?
Great.
Good. How'd you do at the farmer's market?
How'd you know I was at the farmer's market?
I talked to you this morning, remember?
Oh, that's right. That's right. Well, found some nectarines, some peaches. Found some peaches. Yeah, some nice strawberries. Still some strawberries in season.
All right.
And I got some eggplants. So maybe I'll make a little baba ganoush later on.
Very good. I was giving Andy pointers on how to pick peaches out.
Sure.
And you look for the yellow stripe on top.
Okay.
There's little yellow stripes on top.
Good.
All right. Let's get back to baseball, Andy. Pat and I were talking about Thursday night and Matt Moore and just the excitement of that game that was preceded by the Dodgers making the trade for Ruiz. And then Matt Moore goes out and gives the game the Giants had hoped he would do. You could just take us through a little bit of the emotions of that night, especially pregame with Kershaw and Ellis.
Well, yeah, it's interesting. I mean, really a surprise to a lot of people in that Dodger clubhouse that they would trade A.J. Ellis for another catcher. When, you know, this is a guy who, you know, is a backup catcher now, and he basically is Clayton Kershaw's best buddy and personal catcher. And he's had a really good on-base percentage over his career, had a lot of big hits against the Giants, I can remember, but definitely not a guy who's going to give you a lot on offense right now. But that guy's got a lot of stature in that room, especially with the most important guy in that room, Kershaw. And so a bit of a stunner that they would trade him for another catcher. Now, I'm sure that Chase Utley probably gave his full endorsement to Chooch, Carlos Ruiz. They played together on a lot of playoff teams in Philadelphia. But a guy who can hit left-handed pitching, and the Dodgers obviously, I think, entered that series with the lowest batting average against left-handers in the majors. So they saw that as a weakness that they wanted to try to address. And so, you know, but a little bit of a surprise that they would take that kind of a hit to their clubhouse chemistry to make that move. And I think that they were a little bit stunned by it. And that may have played a small role in Matt Moore no-hitting him all the way to the ninth inning, although I think the major thing was just Moore was on his game.
What kind of message are they sending in Clayton Kershaw, if any? If Clayton Kershaw has been so vocal about his relationship with A.J. Ellis and him catching 13 or 17 starts or whatever the number is that some kind of message being sent to Clayton Kershaw?
I wouldn't read anything into that. I also wouldn't read anything into, oh, well, this means Kershaw's not coming back this season.
Right.
I don't think that that's a factor either. I think that this is a Dodger front office that is, you know, looks at things a little more dispassionately maybe than, you know, or allows, you know, one pitcher's preference to take precedence over what they think is a better baseball move that makes them a better baseball team. But, you know, it's the age-old question of does chemistry come with winning or does the winning happen because of the chemistry? And in this case, this is a team that is in first place, and they did make a move that will disrupt their chemistry a little bit. And they obviously, the front office doesn't really value that as highly as getting a little bit better against a left-handed starting pitcher. So, and if anything, the fact that Moore went out as a lefty and did what he did against them, you could argue that that proves the front office's point that they needed another guy in there who could do a little bit of damage against left-handed pitching.
Andy Baggerly with us, Extra Bags on Twitter. The boost from the Matt Moore game, I thought, being at the ballpark yesterday, and you were there, of course, on Thursday night and got to see it firsthand, I thought the boost of the ball club was noticeable. And coming back and getting ready for this Braves series, the worst team in baseball, and going out and getting some runs last night in the first inning. I thought there was a big boost from the Matt Moore game, Andy. And you don't like to make too big a deal of one game, but I thought it was noticeable.
Oh, no, I totally agree. And I think probably about 2 weeks ago, Marty, you know, I was on with you and we talked about what's it going to take to turn this thing around. And I said it takes a Bumgarner stepping up and grabbing a game, you know, by both ears and just saying, I'm going to win this game for you and being dominant, or a Cueto doing that. And it turns out they did get that pitching performance, but they had to wait a while for it. And it was from Matt Moore. You know, now, of course, Bumgarner had that 1-0 loss where he practically had a game like that, but they didn't end up on the right end of things. So You know, I think that was huge for Moore because it lets him settle in, really feel like he's part of this team. And you could kind of see it coming from him. And I wrote about it on the off day before the Dodger series started about Nunez getting a little more comfortable and Will Smith getting a little more comfortable and Moore. You know, he really, when I talked to him after his start against the Mets, he really was feeling good about working with Buster Posey, was kind of surprised that Posey kind of challenged him to use his cutter a little bit more. And he said, you know what, I really feel like I can take this into my next start. And that's something that Posey and Dave Righetti have really been on him about. They said, look, you know, I know you've got a lot of confidence in your fastball and curve and you're trying to prove yourself here, but don't feel like you have to throw, you know, your absolute, you know, best pitches. You can use your curve, your changeup. You can use your cutter and mixing is really going to allow you to keep guys off your fastball a little bit better, and then it's going to be more effective as a result. And I think you sort of saw that in the last start. And, you know, he had an 11-pitch battle with Justin Turner, a 10-pitch strikeout of Chase Utley. He just kept executing pitches again and again and not backing off, not walking guys. So that's the Matt Moore that I think the Giants really envisioned when they gave up a lot to get him. And now maybe he can feel like he doesn't have to prove himself. He's gone out and he's pitched a big game for these guys in the pennant race, beating the first-place team, and now he can just go out and do his thing.
Boy, that's why he's here, and I know they scouted that game that he pitched against the Dodgers earlier in the year very heavily, and I know that weighed a lot in the favor of making the trade and giving up Matt Duffy. And the September call... Well, let me ask you this before we go on to September call-ups, because Suarez is here today, and not a September call-up, but he's actually pitching today against the Braves, and PV has the bad back. Did anyone see this coming, or is this something that sort of came out of nowhere?
It's only a surprise in that they said that PV was going to start. Now, you know, remember when they had Matt Cain and Jake PV and they had to demote someone from the rotation to make room for Moore, they chose to demote PV. So they had more confidence in Cain than they did in PV at that point. And then, of course, they have to put Cain on the DL with quote-unquote back injury, you know, because they needed his roster spot, you know, when they skipped the fifth starter. So you already know that Peavy's behind Cain on the confidence pecking order. Cain's not available, and I really think that Suarez is probably the best guy they have to be their fifth starter in September. And the only problem was you couldn't bring him up, you know, without getting rid of somebody before rosters expanded. And this is the last start that they'll have to go through in their rotation before those rosters expand. And I think that they just crossed the bridge to saying, you know what, we got to go with the guy who gives us the best chance to win, and they think it's Albert Suarez. So PV goes on the DL. That's the move they have to make to get him up here, and Suarez gets the ball today.
Andy, hey, before we get into September call-ups and what's going forward and Samardzija and his improvement, his turnaround, throwing the curveball, just looking back one more time at the series down in Los Angeles, if a pitcher needs help, he has a side session, or he gets in there with Righetti and works on it, or a batter gets extra work in the cage or with the tee and that whole deal. How does Roberto Kelly kind of turn it around? Because that was one of the more significant moments down in L.A.
Well, you're right. It was a miscommunication. Either he gave the sign and Bumgarner didn't get it, you know, but that's not the way that Bochy presented it. He didn't really throw Roberto under the bus, but he did say it was a miscommunication with Roberto. So maybe he didn't give the sign. They didn't really say for certain what happened. But, you know, there have been a lot of instances. I think you could look at earlier this year, Angel Pagan didn't score on a wild pitch, and mm-hmm. Roberto's just sort of standing there. You know, there are times that I think maybe he's not as demonstrative as a third base coach should be. And there are other times he's had some really good sends and some other ones that he hasn't. And he's said in retrospect that, you know, with two outs and the pitcher coming up, yeah, he should send the guy. Well, yeah, it's pretty obvious. I think that the Giants have to look hard at making a change. I do. And I don't say that lightly because it's someone's job, someone's livelihood. You know, I think that there were times he's gotten a little bit better. And then I think we've seen some backsliding this year. And then you see Steve Decker out there, and he's almost like another Flannery. He's really, really into it. He's he pours a lot of energy into it, and I think he would be a big improvement.
Yeah, you can't be indecisive at third base, and that's the one thing we've seen over the 2 years. So you're right. I agree. I think something will transpire in
this season.
No, they don't operate
no,
like that.
No, okay. They wouldn't do it in the middle of the year. I don't think you would see that at all. And you do have to give Roberto credit. This is a team that's been very efficient on the base paths. you know, when you look at the metrics and taking extra bases, scoring from second on a single, you know, team speed obviously has a lot to do with that. But these guys get good secondary leads. They get good reads. And Roberto's a part of that. I mean, I watched this guy in spring training, and he's working with the base runners in stations, and he works with the pitchers in their base running, too. This is a team that runs the bases pretty well, and I think that you do have to give him a little credit for that. Outfield defense positioning, he's part of that as well. So, you know, it's not just to boil it down and say, look, the guy's not doing a good job as a third base coach. He has other things that he brings to the table, other attributes. But, you know, there are times when mistakes have been made that really can't be made. And I think that you look at the body of work and you realize that maybe they could do a little better.
Absolutely. Good. Wait, very good expression of that thought, Andy. Andy, September call-ups are coming. You know, Gorky's Hernandez is here. And, of course, the Twitter world thought that he should have been Superman.
Come on.
And flown through the air to get that little single. But, of course, there was no way in the world. But he's here. Who else may come up, you think, in September when the rosters expand? It's just next Thursday when they'll be in Wrigley.
Well, now here's the thing. Normally they bring them up in two waves, as you know, Marty. They'll bring up the people that they need right away, which is usually an extra pitcher or two, a third catcher. They'll have to find a way to get maybe Miguel Olivo on the 40-man roster. And those are usually the guys that you see right away. And then they bring up the second wave after the AAA season ends. I'm not sure what the Rivercats' last game is, but it's usually around the 4th or 5th or so. The other reason I think they're going to wait just a couple days after September 1 is they're going to be at Wrigley Field in the smallest clubhouse in the major leagues, and that includes Boston. And there just are not that many lockers there. And if they don't see somebody really being able to have an impact in that series, I think they're going to wait until they get to Denver in the second stop of that road trip. So, you know, that's probably why you won't see all the call-ups on September 1. You might just see a couple of them. I think it's going to be interesting to see which of the starting pitchers they bring up. We already knew Suarez would be up. Stratton has seen a little bit of time. Blackburn has gotten up but hasn't gotten in. And then you look at Ty Block. He's had a really nice year, had a great run of about 8 or 10 starts. And, you know, they like to reward guys when they can. So there's Joan Gregorio also is on the 40-man roster, a guy they could bring up. But I don't think they're going to bring up all these pitchers. So they do have some tough decisions to make because there are some hurt feelings when somebody doesn't get the call who's on the 40-man roster. And then you've got Jarrett Parker. We'll probably see him. And once Mac Williamson's shoulder is okay, we'll probably see him as well.
Boy, interesting time coming up here. Get the bandwagon ready.
Of course. We'll see Kelby Tomlinson, too. Don't want to leave him out.
That's right. Get the bandwagon ready. Once they win a few games, and we'll talk to Mark Bowman of MLB.com in just a second, but you got the Braves here, and then you got Greinke and Robbie Ray next week. That's not a piece of cake either. But then it's into Wrigley Field, and then it's back to the West until the Cardinals come in. So, Andy, I say get the bandwagon ready. People are going to be jumping on. That's how I see it.
Well, it's amazing, isn't it, Marty? I mean, we go through the season, and just when you think, oh, I'm going to quit on this team, I thought to myself, how can anyone quit on a team that's leading the wild card chase? I don't care if they're 11-24 or whatever since the break. They would be a playoff team if the season were to end now, and I just don't think you know, maybe you get frustrated, but I don't think you quit on a team that's in that position, especially when we've seen them play some really lousy baseball for more than a month in 2014, and they got in and they won the whole thing. So, you know, it doesn't really matter how you get to 90-plus wins, but if you do get there, you get in the playoffs, you got a shot to win it. So I think it's going to be really, really exciting to see the Dodgers and Giants come down because they both really want to win this division title.
All right. Andy, thanks so much. We'll see you at the ballpark.
Thanks,
Andy. I appreciate
Andy.
It. Thanks, Andy.
Okay, thanks, fellas. Appreciate it.
That is Andy Bagley. Always great to have extra bags on. Always gives you an interesting report, huh?
He does a bang-up column, man. I like reading it every day, so.